What's up, everyone? Taylor May here with Security VIP. I want to thank you for tuning in to another episode of our podcast series, Your Home for Nothing But the Truth. And hey, if you're passionate about sharing the unfiltered truth and want to be featured in a community that's all about it, Security VIP is your home. Our community boasts over 2,500 end users in the security industry, spanning from sectors such as retail, gaming, entertainment, education, professional sports, healthcare, government, and even more. So whether you're eager to boost your company's visibility, showcase cutting-edge technology, or you want to address key industry changes, Security VIP is the platform for you. So if you're ready to dive in, shoot us an email at info@securityvip.net, or you can connect with us on LinkedIn at SVIP. Remember, Security VIP is your home for nothing but the truth, and we look forward to featuring you in the next episode. Stay safe.
You think you know me.
Today on Security VIP, we feature Blockchain Gandalf, Keir Finlow-Bates. Get ready for nothing but the truth. And a broken dream, and we'll leave it all
behind. Understand, it's so real to me. What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Security VIP podcast, your home for nothing but the truth. As always, I'm your host, Taylor May, and today we are diving into the world of blockchain. That's right. For my physical security friends, they've reached out to me and they said, you know what, Taylor, I know you're on the cybersecurity side of the industry. You're on the dark side after a decade on the physical side. And now you're delving into NFT and crypto and blockchain. And number one, I want to understand what the hell that is. But number two, you know, what are the challenges you're seeing? What is the Web3 space? And so I said to myself, you know, I got to have more cybersecurity guys on this podcast, but I got to have a blockchain expert on this podcast. And lo and behold, there's a man named Keir Finlow-Bates, who is aka the Blockchain Gandalf. Literally, if you guys look up him, you will see Blockchain Gandalf attached to his name. But he is my expert. He's my expert when it comes to blockchain technology. Super intelligent individual. He does some work for us at Resonance as well. So I'm proud to have him as a colleague at Resonance Security for our cybersecurity efforts. But Keir is on the podcast today. And Keir, my friend, welcome to Security VIP. How are we doing?
No, thank you. Well, I'm very glad to be here.
Glad to have you on. And like I said, you know, I've had a lot of my listeners reach out to me about blockchain technology. But before we dive into that, I guess, Keir, can you just give my listeners kind of your background experience and who exactly you are?
Right. Okay. I started off as a mathematician. I did a degree at Cambridge in maths and information engineering, and then a PhD at London South Bank in mathematics and education. And then I was a maths lecturer for a couple of years. Then I moved into software, first as a tech writer and then as a test engineer. And I've worked on all sorts of things from security at Citrix to document management at Xerox, 3D modeling at EDS, and satellite navigation at Qualcomm. But for the last 10 years or so, I've been pretty much full-time blockchain. I found out about it in 2010, found the technology very interesting, was clueless about economics, so I didn't buy any of the tokens back in the good old days when they cost virtually nothing. But it has worked out for me because blockchain is now my bread and butter, and I invent and patent blockchain ideas. I research blockchain concepts, and I just try to keep abreast with what's going on in the space, which has exploded in the last 10 years.
It has exploded. I'm itching myself because when Bitcoin was in the infancy stage, man, I was a senior in high school and everyone was talking about Bitcoin, but no one took it seriously. Just like, you know, you're mentioning you wish you would have took advantage of the tokens back then. I mean, obviously everyone I think is itching themselves and scratching themselves on why didn't I take Bitcoin back then? Because, you know, I would have made a millionaire now. But you're right.
Yeah.
You are. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have had that experience. I mean, I remember at Qualcomm, over a period of a month, I went to lunch with 15 different guys who have PhDs, who are very smart, explained Bitcoin to them and asked them if they would be interested in buying some. My plan being that for each one who bought some, I would buy the equivalent amount. And they all thought it was nonsense. And in the end, it was my wife actually who said, well, you know, you talk about it so much. Why don't you just buy some and shut up? And I think we spent our 1 week's grocery money on it. So unfortunately, I'm not a millionaire, but you know, it's I've done well out of it. I can't complain.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've got barely a half of a coin, you know, and I'm still itching away to get my full self, full token worth. But
right, well, there's only 0.002 per person on the planet, so you're already ahead.
But I guess, Kira, you know, obviously I've seen your videos. They're great. And I guess when people look at blockchain, they want to understand what blockchain is. But I guess tell us, you know, how did you even get the name Blockchain Gandalf? Because obviously Gandalf, coming from the Lord of the Rings days, I put a post about why I love that movie and love that series. But, you know, how did you earn Blockchain Gandalf as the name? And then walk us through the actual technology of blockchain.
Right. So if we go back a bit, I had a startup. And I was a typical CTO type trying to be a CEO and didn't understand even the difference between sales and marketing. And then I realized that I hated cold calling and it wasn't very successful for me. So I thought I'd better get a social media presence. And I started recording videos where I walk through the forests in Finland talking for 2 or 3 minutes about various blockchain concepts. And I've now got about 1,000 videos on YouTube on my channel. And on LinkedIn, there's a chap called Anthony Day. He's got a newsletter, and he's quite well known in the blockchain space as a marketing guy. And he said, you know, with your gray beard and you're walking through the woods, you're a real blockchain Gandalf. And he kept referring to me as that for 2 or 3 months. And then I finally thought, well, I might as well try using that as my sort of tagline for my profile. And it stuck, and it turns out it's just good branding. So that's the story behind Blockchain Gandalf. And I was a bit resistant towards it initially because I am at heart a bit of a geek and an engineer. But, you know, you have to, when someone in marketing gives you some advice about how to market yourself, you should really pay attention.
I just think it resonates, man, with a lot of Lord of the Rings fans, number one. But number two, just blockchain. Because, I mean, I'm a nerd at heart, too. I got Star Wars and Darth Vader gear and Darth Maul gear all in my office. And then, obviously, I'm a huge fan of Lord of the Rings. So I think it definitely sticks, man, with that kind of mantra.
Well, I have to say, I've read it cover to cover 40 times. So first time when I was 9, I think.
It's great, man, and honestly, like, it's a series that just keeps on giving back to the younger generations. Like, when you know, even the up and coming, they want to understand what Lord of the Rings is, you know. So, but walk us through blockchain technology. You know, Kier, what are you seeing? What's the technology do? What is the biggest advantage to the Web3 space with blockchain?
Right. So, the problem you usually face with people describing to you what blockchain is they start from the engineering point of view. And really, quite frankly, when it comes to technology, most people aren't interested in that. You don't want to know how a car engine works. You just want to know that it'll drive you to and from the shops, unless right. You're a car enthusiast or, you know. So with blockchain, it's the same. If I sit here and I start talking about peer-to-peer networks and consensus protocols and asymmetric key cryptography, people's eyes glaze over. So I think really the key thing to understand is that it's a censorship resistant technology, because it's not in the hands of a single entity, a government or a big corporation. It's spread out across thousands and thousands of people running the software on their machines. You as a participant on the blockchain are guaranteed that your transaction will go through if you follow the protocol correctly. And secondly, you can create your own identity on the blockchain. You can create your own blockchain addresses. You're not going to a Facebook or a Google or an Apple and getting an ID from them with their permission. So that is sort of the fundamental thing behind it. And it works because of something called decentralization. And
right.
People get hung up on that term and they start becoming decentralization maximalists, where everything should be decentralized. I don't fall into that camp myself. It just happens to work in this particular instance. And then the first blockchain, Bitcoin, what the inventor of that system, Satoshi Nakamoto, was trying to do was build an accounting ledger that was distributed and decentralized and censorship resistant. So Bitcoin is basically a big ledger that is keeping track of which addresses own how much Bitcoin. And really, pretty much what you can do on it is you can either hold your Bitcoin in your address or you can transfer it to someone else. So it works very much like money. And then the final thing is that as people have started to appreciate that this could be a pretty big thing, I mean, advances in accounting technology don't come along very often. The last major invention would probably be double entry bookkeeping, which is about 500 years old. Maybe spreadsheets would count as something. But even there, then they're not like, that's not a fundamental invention. That's kind of a making things easier, more rapid. So when you look at Bitcoin, you have a new invention that has a lot of the properties of money and a lot of the properties of something like gold. But as Nakamoto put it, him or herself, we don't know who they are, you can transmit it from one end of the planet to the other electronically by email, for example, if you really wanted to. So that, I think, starts giving you an idea of why this could be a valuable invention. You know, the idea of having something that's like gold, but you don't have to ship it in a truck or fly it on an airplane or move it around in vaults. It's electronic. It just sits there protected by your private key until you decide that you want to send it somewhere else. And as a result, it started kind of accruing value, a real dollar value. And I think now we're at about $70,000, which, to be honest, 10 years ago, I just thought would be completely out of the question.
You and me both. And that's the pro, right? I mean, the advantageous advantage to, you know, having currencies and transactions just be seamless. I think that's...
Yeah. I mean, it's a problem we have with our banking system. If I want to get paid by somebody in New York and I'm here in Finland, the international banking system is not great.
Right.
I've had clients who have sort of said, well, what's your routing number and your account number? And I'm like, well, I'm in Finland. We use IBAN. I don't have a routing number and an account number. I have an international banking account number. And they go, no, but you can extract those numbers from it. It's like, actually, since 2019, you can't. My bank account doesn't break down into an American-compatible system. And then we're stuck with, well, how do you get paid? And then it's like, well, we could use PayPal. But they have a history of blocking transactions and holding people's money,
right?
Sometimes for a year. You know, and even if you do have a working banking system, getting paid from abroad can take 2-3 days, a week, if you're unlucky. So with something like a stable coin on Ethereum or with Bitcoin, you know, I'm paid in 10 minutes. I can see it there in my wallet, sometimes in like 10 seconds. And on Ethereum, it'll be there within 12 seconds. So that is just amazing compared to the way the legacy financial systems work. And then on top of that, you have all this automation that you can build into it. So right. Maybe some of your listeners will have heard of smart contracts. So that's a way of programming the blockchain so that you can automate the actions of moving value around. So this is like giving a programmer access to a bank's APIs and allowing them to actually play with moving money around, writing code that can conduct exchanges or trades, that can lock funds up and then release them under certain conditions. On Ethereum, you can even create your own tokens. So from a development point of view, it's really exciting. And it makes something like Stripe that integrates, you know, your website with the legacy financial system, that looks like Stone Age technology in comparison.
Well, I mean, who doesn't like getting paid in 10-15 seconds? I mean, even if you're providing a service for a client and they want to pay over blockchain, you know, getting that, you invoice them and you're paid 10-15 even 60 seconds later over blockchain, mm-hmm. that instead of a net 30 or a net 45, you know, typical payment terms. I mean, this is the advantages and automation that blockchain provides. But I guess, Kier, walk us through the defaults, right? Because with every pro, there's got to be a con somewhere. And I know there's cons in those smart contracts when it comes to automating, you know, those programming languages. But talk about some of those, you know, maybe cons that maybe have some people reserved about moving over to blockchain technology.
Right. So the downside is you become a lot more responsible for your well-being and your actions. So when you go to a third party and you say, bank, look after my money, or, you know, brokerage firm, look after my shares, then you're handing responsibility off to somebody else. And that has the downside that they may turn out to not be reliable, or they could be scammers, or they could just be, you know, incompetent. But generally speaking, we're used to these things working pretty well on an, for the average person on a day-to-day basis. Once you move to blockchain, if you are going to do it properly and actually have custody of your own assets, well, then you have to start acting like a bank. You have to be very careful with your private keys to make sure that they don't get compromised and people don't steal your assets. You have to be very careful if you're engaging in DeFi activity, decentralized finance, that you're checking out what you're interacting with, because it's very easy to do the equivalent of, you know, sending $1,000 off to somebody in, you know, Nigeria who claims to have inherited the fortune of a prince. It's kind of all the things that you see in ordinary life, but they're much more prevalent in blockchain because it's new, because scammers are always looking for new ways to scam people, because there's been a sudden influx of a lot of wealth, and because there is a certain level of technical understanding you need to have to not do something stupid. So in that sense, it's a bit like paying for stuff on the internet back before the dot-com boom. It's all still bedding down, and we're all still getting familiar with how it works. And you have to kind of it's the Wild West. You have to be careful.
Well, I was just about to mention that, because you and I spoke probably a couple weeks ago or a month ago, and you mentioned the Web3 space being that kind of Wild West mentality when it came to blockchain technology and even crypto and using NFTs. And I guess what is it going to take, though, Kier, for like full adoption, or even like these mainstream institutions? I know gaming and casinos are probably more proactive than any other industry I've met. And they'll put that, and some of them already are switching to blockchain technology on some of them. At least I know some of the ones on Vegas are. But what do you think it's going to take for more mass adoption of blockchain and kind of that Web3 space?
Well, I guess for starters, it's like, what is the use case for the up-and-coming clients, right? There's a lot of people in Web3 and crypto who are in it because they find it interesting and fun. But even people who are very enthusiastic about it still probably don't engage with DeFi protocols on a daily basis, or transmit large sums of crypto around the world on a weekly basis. Even it has its place. So I think for people who aren't yet into it, it'll kind of creep up on them. They'll just discover after a while that, hey, actually, I get paid quicker if I get paid this way. There are things like interacting with games that I have to do by using this technology, because that's how the game works. And in a lot of cases, they won't even know that there's blockchain in the background, in the same way that they don't know that there are lots of databases in the background. I mean, databases have been around for, 50, 60 years now. Back in the 80s, it was a big deal. They were very expensive. You needed to be an expert to use them. Now, when you're installing software on your computer, it's spinning up databases left, right, and center, and you don't even know that they're there in the background. So I think that's eventually what will happen to blockchain. A lot of these things will go into the back end. They will just become standard. They will become more reliable and robust. The interfaces will get better, and they'll sort of find their niche where they're useful and valuable. And for blockchain, the big use case at the moment is moving value around electronically. I think later on, we're going to see it being used in identity management as well. I think that's going to be a big one, where you're no longer relying on an entity like Google handling your identity on the internet. You know, if you wake up tomorrow and Google has decided to cancel your account, and you have used log on with Google for all these websites, you're screwed. You're suddenly, your 10 favorite websites are no longer accessible to you. You have to start again from scratch. So, so that would be a situation where I think maybe blockchain may creep into sort of everyday life. But again, it'll happen in a way where you don't realize that it's there, because you don't need to know that it's there or how it's working. You just need to know what it gives you, I guess, would be owning your own identity.
Yeah, I agree, because I think anytime you can avoid disrupting user experience and it's more just of a seamless or automation process for that user, and they have no idea that you're even using blockchain or blockchain is being used in the background, I mean, that's gonna I think that I agree that's what it's gonna take, I think, to get more massive adoption to at least transactions. Because I mean, I think even professional sports athletes are starting to use blockchain. I think you've seen a couple NFL athletes use it. Obviously, gaming and casino is heavy. And I think you're right, Kira. There's so many advantages with blockchain, but there's also those defaults and cons that people have to look out for, which I think it's even more present to mention that you got to find a provider that specializes in those kind of attacks and even cons, right? I mean, smart contract audits and people that can do those services well. And so I think obviously I'm giving a plug to, you know, Resident Security and what we do. But at the end of the day, regardless of if you're looking towards Web3 and you're looking towards using crypto and NFTs and using a token to do a transaction or a service, I mean, make sure you have someone that is an expert in that space to obviously prevent those hacks, right? Man, it seems like hacks happen every single day. If you're not prioritizing cybersecurity, well, you should be. That's why here at Resident Security, we make it easy for you. If you're an individual, if you're an institution, you want to prioritize your personal information, your company's information when it comes to hackers and bad actors out there, believe me, these threat actors are getting better and better every single day. So when it comes to data leaks, phishing campaigns, vulnerability scans, monitoring your own website, it's important to remember that there are solutions out there to protect you. And more importantly, here at Resident Security, we want to resonate with you. Make sure to check us out, resonance.security. You won't be mistaken.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just not feasible for people to go and dig into this on their own. Right. I mean, it's the same as your car safety, right? I don't determine whether or not my car is safe to drive. It has the annual inspection for that. And we wouldn't want to live in a world where everybody had to make sure that their car was safe. That kind of stuff is outsourced. And I think it's the same for blockchain, right? That you are going to be relying on the software that you're using and companies that specialize in ensuring that the things that you're interacting with are safe. So as you gave the example, Resonance does smart contract audits. That's going to be a given.
I agree. I 100% agree. I guess, yeah, I do want to give you a plug though too, Kira. I've been looking at your book. I've been meaning to buy it, dude, online. I apologize. It's crazy travel. So I'm going to buy it today, actually, after we get off this call. But I do want to give a plug to Kira because he actually wrote a book. He is an author as well as a mathematician and an expert in blockchain. So a man of many hats. But his book is called Move Over Brokers, Here Comes the Blockchain. You can get it on the Amazon store. I'm looking at it right now, guys. The paperback copy goes for $23 to $28. The hardcover copy goes for $33. Make sure you go check it out. And Kira, do you want to just give our listeners just a preview of what that book entails?
So I decided back in 2019 that I wanted to write a book explaining what I learned about blockchain. And I wanted to do it in a way that anybody could pick it up and read it and get something from it. So it was quite a tough challenge because you want to have some depth to it, but you don't want people to get lost on page 3. And what I settled on was the use of analogies, which is where you draw a comparison between blockchain and some other things. And the fundamental parallel I use is comparing the blockchain industry to the punk rock music industry in the 70s and early 80s, where there was a change in how music was manufactured and marketed. So, but then there's also analogies using Minecraft, using a town with a public transport system, and they're all understandable. So people have said that they find it really educational, but also really entertaining and quite funny in parts as well, which is fantastic from my perspective, because that's exactly what I was aiming for.
Well, I love it. And guys and girls, it's called Move Over Brokers, Here Comes the Blockchain. It's on at the Amazon store. Dr. Kier Finlow-Bates wrote it. It actually has 4.9 stars, Kier, on Amazon. So you're actually entertaining your viewers, man. That's a pretty good rating right there.
Yeah. I'm really annoyed because my best friend from college gave me 4 stars.
That's the defect, right? That's why you don't have 5 right now.
Yeah, I had to take him to task. I think there's about 50 reviews now, so there's been a few fours, but I don't think there's been anything lower. So, of course, you know that you've really made it when you do get your first 1-star or 2-star review, because you can never make everybody happy.
So oh, at that everyone's point, a critic, man.
Right. Well, the thing is, at the moment, the book's more of a sort of a bit of an underground cult classic kind of book. Mm. I have to admit, personally, I'm longing for the day where it's an overground non-cult classic. But I'll settle for there being a small, dedicated fan base who really love it.
Do you you plan on writing another one?
Well, I have a second, much, much shorter book called Evil Tokenomics, which that one is much cheaper and much shorter. And it's just, it's written from the perspective of a con man called Maximilian Sauneron, explaining how he uses tokenomics to defraud people. And in the process, explains what you need to look out for when you're trying to avoid being scammed in like a token sale or an ICO or things like that. Because I was seeing a lot of pseudo tokenomics. So tokenomics is the economics of issuing and distributing tokens to build an ecosystem. And I saw a lot of people doing stuff that I thought was really sketchy. And so I thought I'd cast some light on that. And it turns out that if you do it by pretending to be one of them, it actually makes learning what it is you need to look out for much easier. It sticks in your mind more. So that one's been doing reasonably well as well, actually.
Well, personally, I actually love learning from people that used to rip off other people for a living. Like, I actually love the cheaters and the scams and the bad actors. And people think that's weird, but honestly, like, you know what these guys used to do for a living? There's a guy named Richard Marcus who used to rip off casinos for a living and just stole millions and millions of dollars at table games. Mm-hmm. And now he gives back to the casino industry on all the tricks and maneuvers that he used to right. do to look out for. But I think those are the best people to learn from, man. I mean, yeah. Those are the best people that did this for a living.
Well, I find that kind of stuff fascinating too. Another one is magicians. When you get people like Penn and Teller explaining how a trick works, and in the process conducting an even more subtle trick that you can't work out how they did it. I mean, that stuff's great. Unless it's actually happening to you, if you're the one who's being ripped off.
Yeah, I was about to say, if it's not happening to you, then it's great, right?
Yeah.
But well, Kira, final comments, my friend. Tell us anything else that you think is valuable for our listeners around blockchain or yourself or where you see the industry heading.
Oh, that's a really difficult question because I hadn't prepared anything. I think what I'm finding really fascinating at the moment is the 180 degree turns that a whole bunch of public figures have been making recently concerning crypto. So, we had people like Jamie Dimon, the CEO of JP Morgan, people like Trump. Was it Larry Fink? That was the guy who's BlackRock CEO. So you've got all these people who just a couple of years ago were saying that Bitcoin and crypto is nonsense, has no value, is evil. And then suddenly they're turning around and they're starting to praise it. And I think I find it fascinating on two levels. Firstly, you know, it shows that this technology and these assets have finally arrived. And secondly, it also tells you something about the people involved. If it's that easy to pull off one mask, then surely there's another mask underneath it.
Right. No, I agree. It's kind of interesting how that narrative's, you know, kind of transitioned and flipped when a person of influence or a person that has millions of followers kind of changes that dynamic, you know. So,
but it's funny how they do it without drawing attention to it. And I don't really understand this thing in human beings, how people don't seem to notice when somebody that is influencing them or someone that's leading them completely changes direction and then right. continues to talk as though that's the direction they've always been going in. And nobody seems to find that jarring, because I just, even if I agree with the person, I find it very, very disconcerting and jarring when there are people who are that able to just, you know, at the flick of a switch, change their opinions.
Well, this is why this podcast is nothing but the truth, because I believe in transparency and I believe in accountability, and it's hard to find authentic people, my friend. It is truly hard to find authentic people in this world sometimes.
Well, I agree with that.
Well, Kira, if people want to get more involved with you, my friend, I know you've got so many followers on LinkedIn, but obviously a lot of subscribers on YouTube. But if they just want to reach out for advice or counsel, just to, you know, plug your brain, or I'm going to again plug your book. Please check out Kira's book on Amazon. But if they want to get more involved with you, how can they do that?
Well, the place I hang out the most is LinkedIn, and I'm the only Kier Finlow Bates on LinkedIn, so you can find me there very easily. I accept all connections, and if the person then immediately tries to arrange a meeting to explore synergies or sell me website development services, then I disconnect from them, but otherwise I don't. So that's where you find me.
Awesome, my friend. Yeah, I'm the same way. Imagine all the sales campaigns and lead gen emails I get on LinkedIn are just insane. So I get it. But yeah, guys and girls, please follow Kier Finlow Bates on LinkedIn. Connect with him. Don't sell him. Go check out his book, Move Over Brokers. Here Comes the Blockchain on Amazon. He is the Blockchain Gandalf. I'll say that like 3,000 times. He's earned that name. I think you should trademark that name now, Kier, personally. No, appreciate the time, my friend. And guys and girls, if you guys want to listen to more episodes of our podcast series, make sure to check us out on LinkedIn at SVIP. You can listen to all episodes of our podcast on Spotify, Pandora, Apple Music, Amazon Music. The list goes on. We will catch you guys on the next one. Stay safe out there.